T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
All right, and joining us now on the dial pad guest line, the aforementioned Alex Boone joins us here in on the Dame and Bruce Show, 95.7 The Game. Alex, Ryan Covey, Matt Kolsky, Ray Ratto, how you doing, man?
Guys, how are you doing?
Doing terrific. Nice. You sound fired up. All right, I got to ask you about this, man. 18 penalties, 216 yards. Let's start right there. Clearly, it's preseason game number one. These things can be fixed. Anything else, though, that tells you about the level of focus and what's going on down there?
No, I mean, listen, at the end of the day, whether it was the one, twos, or threes, that's unacceptable. 220 yards almost in penalties, that's absolutely unacceptable for a Pee Wee team. So I think that they definitely got ripped apart for that today.
So we have heard that there is a renewed focus, an adjustment in exactly how they're calling holding penalties. A, can you explain to us what the heck they're talking about? And B, do you think we're actually going to see that continue into the regular season? Or is this one of those deals where they overcall the heck out of it in the preseason to get guys used to it, and then we'll see it back off a little bit?
Absolutely. I think that's exactly what it is. I think this is just one of those things where, at the beginning, all the offensive linemen, I mean, for many years, I remember sitting there like, there's no way they're going to do that to us. They cannot do that. And they do. In the preseason, they absolutely overthrow that penalty. They're going to show you exactly what they're looking for. But then in the season, it's going to trickle down because people are going to see it's going to have an effect on the game. And it's going to ruin the game too much. And they're not going to like it. So they're going to go, you know what, listen, let's just taper down a little bit. Calm down on these penalties and we'll be fine.
Okay, penalties aside, when you looked at, if you looked at that game at all, and I admire you all the more if you didn't, but if you did look at that game, what did you come away with that you think is a lasting impression that will serve you well in week 5?
Well, I think obviously missed opportunities. I mean, that's the one thing that I think that most teams and most people, they overlook, right? Like, you see a guy throw a ball and he drops it and you go, well, that's average. I mean, it's fine. He dropped it. It's not okay. I mean, that ball was thrown to you. You need to catch it. There's no excuse why you didn't come down with it. So I think that, you know, as they look at this film, they're going to see so many missed opportunities. They're going to go, why would I do that? Why? I mean, such a simple thing. Just come down with the ball. And listen, I never did it. I don't know how hard it is. But today I know it's your job to do that. So you need to pick those things up. And those are the things that as the season goes on, you look back at those opportunities and go, man, what if he would have caught that? What if I would have done this? What if I could have done just a little bit more? You know, those are the ones that keep you up at night. Those are the ones that hurt the most.
Talking to Alex Boone, former 49ers lineman on the Dame and Bruce Show. All right, I want to ask you about a couple of rookie wideouts. First, Jalen Hurd, a couple of touchdowns over the weekend. From a physical attribute standpoint, looks to be just what the doctor ordered for this team. Ran a dude over for a touchdown, then out-jumped the guy for another touchdown. Still kind of a raw talent, but where do you assess this guy's ability to help this team this season?
Love it. I absolutely love it. And like you said, his ability to help this team. I mean, I think that's what they're looking for right now, these young guys. Who's going to step up? Who's going to be the guy that everyone's going to have to focus on? You know, this wide receiving core, to me, it's so young and raw that it's so exciting. Because at the same time, you have George Kittle, who's going to scare a lot of people. You obviously have a great backfield if you can get healthy. It's just the receivers. I feel like this is the last piece that needs to come together, and it's a young, raw, talented group. And that's really what you want in your receivers. Because, listen, we're going to try and help mold you into what we need from you. We're going to help you get to where you need to be. But you got to have the physical attributes. You got to have the mentality. Obviously, him running over a safety, that's always fun to watch a receiver do that. Because sometimes I feel like the receivers could be 50-50 on that. And the ones that like to take the charge, I'm a big fan of.
So this is a little bit of a weird question. Apologies in advance to both you and the listeners.
Totally love it.
Well, I've been thinking about this a lot because the Niners went out and put all of their offseason investment, a huge portion of it, into the defensive line. And Basically what they did is just add two big-time pieces at the top, or at least that's what they think they did in Bosa and Ford. And when I look at that, I think kind of about a baseball lineup and how if you have a baseball lineup and you drop a new cleanup hitter in, it can kind of settle everyone else back into the position where they belong. And what I'm getting at is, does that make a guy like Solomon Thomas, an Arik Armstead, some of the big name pieces that the Niners have had for a few years who may have been underwhelming, as an offensive lineman, does Solomon Thomas all of a sudden look a lot scarier when you've just been dealing with Dee Ford for three or four plays? Like, does the depth make the guys who may not have been great seem better?
I love this question because I think a lot of people don't understand what you're saying. And what you're saying is when you bring all these other pieces around, you know, you bring a Dee Ford in, you bring a Bosa in, guys are really going to have to focus on that, right? So now Solomon's going to get his one-on-one, just like everybody who's like, hey, listen, don't let this guy get a one-on-one. Well, now you got your chance. And what you do with that is up to you, Solomon. I mean, we can't go out there and physically rush the passer for you. You have to go out and do that. I think what this is going to do, like we talked about before, is open up an opportunity for him. Hey, listen, Dee Ford's on one side, Joe Bosa's on the other side. Which way are we going to go? We're not really sure. But then in the middle, you got a DeForest Buckner and a Solomon Thomas. I mean, it could be a really, really tough day for offensive lines. And I think this is the point to where people say, hey, listen, you need to step up. You know, I think when I think about this, I think about Ndamukong Suh down in L.A., especially because people don't really know Ndamukong as a pass rusher. But I played him, and I know what the ability that he has. And I was a little disappointed because when everyone's focusing on Aaron Donald, this is your one chance to go out and really wreak havoc and have fun with people. And you didn't really take that opportunity to do that. So I think if Solomon was really looking at this opportunity, he should say, hey, listen, I'm going to have a lot more one-on-ones. It's time for me to step up my game and show what I can do.
At what point in the preseason does an offensive line need to gel completely so that the team has a – the best chance possible of winning game one of the regular season? I've always thought that it's pretty early on in camp because there's so many more moving parts and so many more things that are involved in an offensive line than almost any other part of the field.
Absolutely. And I'm not gonna discredit that at all. I think being an offensive lineman is the hardest position out there. But my honest opinion, and people will disagree with this, but I will tell you that if you are not gelling by April 20th, the first day, you are screwed. And that's the truth. And people look around and they go, well, you don't have all this time. Well, you did. There's so much of the offseason that guys don't realize that they have together. They just waste it doing useless things. When I was with San Francisco, we had one of the greatest offensive lines to ever play the game. And I would absolutely say that to anybody's face. I have no problem with that. But what made us so great and so special was that we always hung out. We were always together. We always believed in each other. We always had each other's back. We always lifted together. We ate together. We talked together. We had the same conversations every day over and over. So we really, I mean, even when people thought we weren't gelling, we were still getting to know each other. We were still talking all the time. We were still trying to figure out what was going on with each other's lives and help each other out. That's what made us so special. And you just don't see that with these old lines anymore because everybody has their own agenda. And everybody wants to be the next thing. And I want to be, you know, oh, big boss hog, but then I'm going to turn around and fail a drug test. I mean, That's not continuity. That has nothing to do with football, so I don't get it.
All right, let me ask you this. C.J. Beathard or Nick Mullins? Who should be backing up Jimmy Garoppolo this year?
Nick Mullins, 100%. I saw him take a hit in that game, and I'm going to tell you right now, I know that hit hurt. But he delivered a ball that should have been caught, once again, missed opportunity. And I thought to myself, you know what, that kid seriously has worked so hard since he's been there. I remember when he came in last year, I loved watching him play. And I still do, and I think he should be the backup.
You mentioned the line you played with, and one of those dudes is still out there suiting up for this team. What makes Joe Staley so incredible?
I think it's his consistency. You know, when we had talked about this before, I think offensive lines are changing. I think guys are so up and down roller coaster riding this league that at the end of the day, they're not really sure what they're doing, coming or going. And I think that what Joe does such a great job of is he takes your moves away from you. He basically uses his space to the best of his ability because he's been doing this for so long, and he knows where his strengths are. He knows where his weaknesses are. Now, he's not going to win 100% of the battles, but at the end of the day, he's going to win 99% of them, and it's going to look really good at the same time.
Last go on this because I find the preseason incredibly frustrating for just listening to people making projections based on the level of evidence we get. When do you, as a player, know when you've got a good team, a bad team, or a middle-of-the-road team? Is it when play the real games?
I think for me, you know, that comes at different times every year. I was just talking to an old friend of mine, and I was talking about how I was like, hey, remember when we came out on Monday night against Minnesota and we ran for like 300 yards and we had such a blast, and then we didn't win one more game the rest of the year? After that game, we had thought, man, we're still right here. How crazy. Jim left. We're still at the top. Like, we're still rolling, people. 5 weeks later, it was a whole different mindset. And that's when we knew, like, hey, listen, we weren't prepared enough. We didn't come in ready enough. We were just being out-coached, outplayed, everything. I mean, we just didn't focus enough on that team. And what a shame, because it was such a wasted year for us. But, you know, I think every team is different. But when you know you have it, man, you better grab the reins and run. And then run as fast as you can and don't stop for anybody.
Hey, let me ask you this on your way out, Alex, man. We appreciate you coming on. Love the energy. Mike McGlinchey, first-round pick last year, definitely flashed in year one. How good can this dude be, man?
Oh, I think he could be the next Staley. I mean, I think you're looking at this kid, and for an offensive lineman to come in this league that young and play as well as he did, I think that's superb. Now you need to take that sophomore step. This is the big year of Leafs, and everyone's excited to see it. I'm excited to see it. Can't wait for the next game, because hopefully the starters get to play finally.
All right, good stuff, man. Appreciate your time, Alex. Let's do it again. Love your insight.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
All right, good stuff from Alex Boone. Man, you got me fired up, man. Now I'm ready for some more preseason football, Ray. Let's do it.
Then he's failed.
He was a really good lineman. Maybe as good, if not better, talker.
Yeah. I like guys that have a little fun with it, man, and they'll. I love guys that aren't playing anymore. And we got some of this from Terrell Owens the other day. Somebody was asking me about, you know, interviewing athletes. That must be the coolest part of your job. And I'm like, well, it is cool because, hey, it's a great name, right? But oftentimes, dudes that are playing, they're not going to say anything. Like, what's their motivation? They say something inflammatory or could be construed in a wrong light.
And all due respect, a lot of them aren't capable of saying much interesting. They right. just don't have much interesting to say.
And even the ones that are going to be guarded with what they have to say because Extremely. They don't want the backlash that comes from saying anything that could be construed as controversial. So, guys that aren't playing anymore.
More fun.
They let it fly.
Although, to be fair, Boone was not one of those guys who was afraid to say controversial things while he was playing.
Which probably helped shorten his career to
I
a certain extent.
I think it did.
All right. Coming up on the other side, the Warriors 2019-2020 schedule released today. We'll take a look at some of the key matchups with the upcoming season for your Golden State Warriors. In the meantime, let's talk to Elena.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
It is Monday afternoon. I am Ryan Covey. He's Matt Kolsky.
Hello.
That's Ray Ratto. And we're just rolling along here on a Monday afternoon. Hence it being Monday afternoon and me making reference to that at the top of the segment. You're welcome.
Hello. Welcome.
Hope everybody had a lovely weekend. Outside lands jumping off.
Kolsky, yeah,
I know you're a big music
year.
Guy. You didn't go?
Yeah, I am pretty done with music festivals.
Really?
I find them frustrating, overcrowded, and usually not very rewarding.
Yeah, I don't like a lot of people around.
Too many people, cost too much.
You hate people in an artistic event.
Yeah. There's so many people. Everything's so expensive. And they always schedule things, so I got to miss one thing I want to see another thing. Like, I'd rather just give the individual artists the $20 to $60 it takes to see them when they play their own show.
Right. That's known as the Kolsky paradigm, where they figure out what you want.
That's right.
And schedule them against each other so that you can only stand in the middle and weep desperately.
Yeah. Well, it's all part of my theory that I am living inside the Truman Show.
You wish your life had that much value and meaning. What's the last concert you've been to, Ray Ratto?
Oh, God.
Earth, Wind, and Fire? I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know.
My wife saw that a couple of months ago.
Oh, nice.
That's a good
Although,
one.
Once Maurice White bit it, it kind of lost a little
you
bit
tapped
of
out?
Steam.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
I mean, he was the guy.
Yeah.
So.
Well, those other guys got to make money somehow, right?
It's sort of earth, wind, and.
Earth, wind, and lighter.
Like a lighter that's going out, like trying to light that bad boy.
Earth, wind, and sparks.
Yeah, it happens. All right. Speaking of sparks. Transition.
Nice.
Golden State Warriors got their schedule out for the 2019-2020 season. They'll open up at home on the 24th against those LA Clippers, the ones with Kawhi Leonard and playoff P, Paul George.
Best Clippers I've ever heard of, to be honest with you.
They look to be insanely good.
You asked earlier, was there anything that jumped out at us? And there is a five-game stretch that jumped out at me just because of the level of competition and because it's the end of January, which is to say before Klay Thompson's return, almost certainly. I think he has, or in fact, he said he won't return before the All-Star break. So definitely before the return of Klay Thompson. And it's there are going to be a couple of these stretches that the Warriors have to get through okay without Klay Thompson if they want to be in the right position to make a real run into playoff position when he's back. And from January 20th to 28th, I'm sorry, to 30th, Portland, Utah, Indy, Philly, Boston. It's five playoff teams. It's two separate road trips because you start with one to Portland, home for Utah, Indiana, then out east for Philly and Boston. And that's just the beginning of a five-game road trip. And I think those are the stretches, especially early in the season, or really any time in the season up till Klay's return, those long stretches of high-quality competition over four, five, six games, those are going to be the spots where the Warriors got to sort of hold the line. They're probably not. We're not going to have any more of those 5-0, 6-0 road trips. Sure. That's not a normal NBA thing. The question will be, when you take a 5-6 game road trip or a 5-game stretch with two little trips in it like that, and it's all against playoff quality competition, can you go 3-2? Can you even go 2-3? Because most non-elite teams are going 1-4.
Yeah, and I think the key, too, will be to beat up on the teams below you and don't give away games that you should win and are the favorite to win. Because we've seen at times the Warriors the last couple of years, because they're not really putting too much concern in any regular season game. They trick off a game against the Suns here, you know, insert random team on a garbage night there. They're not going to have the luxury to do that.
That's right.
Couple of stretches that I've got circled. First of all, I've got Thursday, February 27th when they host the Lakers. At Chase Center Circle, because that's the night that I have that Klay's coming back. Okay, so you're going to want to be there for that. That'll be against the Lakers on February 27th after the All-Star
break.
Hold on.
If he's going to be I prefer Tuesday the 25th against Sac.
No, I understand.
Maybe
I know
he wants
to
play Zion on the 23rd. Let's just keep moving this thing back.
No, I'm sorry.
I think he wants to play the Suns on the 29th.
No, see, now Ray, we know he does not want to do that.
Yeah.
No, I think that's the best way to ease your way into the rigors of the NBA.
That might be
against
true,
the
actually.
Team that literally refuses by contract to play defense.
And not only that, but that's the game right before the All-Star break. So you get one game at Phoenix. You know, it's like playing a minor league rehab assignment.
Oh, yeah, February 12th at Phoenix. I think he was thinking February 29th after the Lakers when they play at Phoenix again.
It's the first night of a back-to-back with the second game being Washington. So he'd have back-to-back games against teams that don't care about anything.
And that's a leap year, February 29th, so that day technically only exists one day out of 4 years.
There will be no one-year anniversary of the Warriors game at Phoenix on February 29th.
Well, you said it there, boy.
Is that the softest road home back-to-back of all time at Phoenix, home for Washington?
That's a good one. That's a good one.
That is the most winnable road home back-to-back I've ever seen in my life.
If they don't win three of those two games,
cancel the
then
playoffs.
They're not going to the playoffs.
That's all true. The more reason for the Thursday, February 27th against the Lakers, play about 20 minutes in that game.
Yep. Then you could even take the next day off.
Yeah, and then you hit the ground running, win a couple games there against Phoenix and Washington. The interesting stretch that I've got pegged to, fellas, incidentally, when they go at Phoenix and then home to Washington, they play a little game at Denver March 3rd, which is never an easy one. But then this four-game stretch at home. Now, I get it. The Raptors stink, but it is the team that played them in the finals. So it'll be Toronto. There's a four-game homestand. You got Toronto, Philadelphia, the Clippers, and Brooklyn. So I think that'll just be interesting. I know KD's not playing. I know Kawhi's not with Toronto anymore. But
I'll tell you what, though.
Some allure there for me.
And right after that, you go at Milwaukee. And I think this is where I would hope, even if he's not back on your February 27th, this is where I'd like to have the 27th is really perfect. Because then he's got a couple weeks to lead up to that stretch. And I think the stretch you just described, Toronto, Philly, Clippers, Brooklyn, and then at Milwaukee, that's a real good spot to see how you stack up against some of the good teams in the NBA.
With Klay back.
Exactly.
Which he's coming back on the 27th.
Right, so
we're all good.
We're all set.
So we're all good.
I don't know that stacking up becomes important at that point. It's trying to figure out where you are in the playoff picture.
Sure.
I think by that point, they should know where they stack up with teams.
Well, no, but I'm
now
saying...
Now it's about you win every night, or you could be screwed.
I'm saying they'll see what their team with Clay looks like against good competition. That's all I'm saying.
A couple,
that game at New York on the 21st.
Well, we'll see how Jordan Poole's doing in that one.
Yeah, we shall.
I bet you won't.
A couple of other games of note. November 6th, it'll be the Warriors at the Rockets, their first trip into Houston since beating them in Game 6 the way they did in pretty amazing fashion last year. November 13th, Warriors at the Lakers. Obviously, it'll be a much different Lakers team this year. That'll be their first matchup with the new-look Lakers. With Anthony Davis, LeBron James, etc. Pelicans at Warriors. Zion makes his first trip to the Bay on December 20th. Warriors again playing on Christmas Day. We heard about that matchup a couple of weeks ago. I guess it was about a week and a half ago. Rockets at the Warriors for the first time in 5 years. The Warriors will not play the marquee game of the NBA schedule that day, but it will be Warriors and Rockets.
Can I just say thank you? I'm so glad. I'd rather have midday. Give me the ABC 2 p.m. What else am I doing on Christmas? People don't do stuff on Christmas, right? You just sit around and watch basketball. I'm being told most people do stuff on Christmas.
I spend time with my family.
That's my mistake.
Yeah.
NBA holiday for Jews, 2 p.m., great time.
By the way, 15 of their first 24 games on the road.
Yes, I noticed that. It's very road-heavy early, which... You would have rather had the reverse because you expect your team to be better at the end of the season than at the beginning. I'll say this. The whole jockeying for playoff position, the rubber's going to hit the road hard at the end of the season because your last four games are at Lakers, at Clippers, home for Portland, at Sacramento.
Right.
And odds are there's three playoff teams and one team fighting to get in that four games. I mean, that's what it is likely to be. And if you need wins in those last four to make yourself a playoff team or get the position you want, they're going to be tough. They're going to be tough to get.
Ray, if Clay comes back, let's say he comes back right around February
27th. Let's say, just for the sake of argument, pick a random day, February 27th.
Yeah, February 27th, home to the Lakers
random.
At the Chase Center. Lakers in town that night. It's a nationally televised game. That's when he's coming back, no problem. Let's say Clay comes back.
I think that'll be a great tune-up for that Phoenix game.
Yeah, there we go.
Sure. Okay, if Clay comes back then, and like any other hypothetical scenario that we lay out on this show, we have to throw in the caveat, health notwithstanding.
Wait, sorry. Important text before you ask Ray the question. We might want to adjust this. I think Ray was correct. We should do the Phoenix game, something I did not consider. Danny Green is on that Lakers team now, and this is all his fault.
That's all the more reason to show him that you're not going to run me out of the league, Danny Green.
Let's stay safe. Come back the 29th.
No, you got to face your fears, Kolsky.
Wow.
You got to face your fears, and I'm in on that.
Wow. What the hell's wrong with you two?
A lot. How much time you got? We got another 90 minutes. I know Ray will start the countdown. Usually in the 5 o'clock hour, he starts the countdown.
26. Okay. Hour 26.
Okay, fair enough. If this team is able to stay reasonably healthy, I know there's probably going to be some, I don't say the term load management. I really hate that term, but there's going to be some emphasis on Steph Curry not playing a ridiculous amount of basketball next season, I feel like, until Clay gets back at least.
I think there's probably an emphasis on that for the remainder of his career.
And that may be very well true. What's a realistic win total for you, though, Ray Ratto, in a playoff positioning? What's optimal? Well, no, what's optimal? What's realistic as far as a positioning when Clay Thompson comes back from injury, and then what's reasonable for the end of the season for this team?
48, seventh.
48 wins, seventh seed in the West?
Yep.
Kolsky?
Yeah, I think I'd probably say 50 and sixth, but I'm right. That's right about, I think they will be between 7 and 10 when Clay comes back. I don't think they're going to be firmly in the playoff race when Clay returns. But with Clay, I think they're probably... I would make them the third or fourth best team in the conference, probably. Just all things being equal, sight unseen with D'Angelo Russell, assuming Clay is relatively healthy but not totally himself down the stretch of the season. It's hard for me to put them on the level of the Clippers right now. I think the Lakers probably are slightly ahead of them as well. And then, you know, Denver, Portland, Houston, Utah, they're right in that group with those teams. For my money, fully healthy.
Fully healthy.
I think because they're going to be missing an all-star future Hall of Famer for the first two-thirds of the season at least, that makes them more in the 8 to 10 range. So can they get from 8, 9, 10 up to 7, 6, 5? I think they can.
How much are guys like Jordan Poole and Eric Paschal going to be relied upon? They've got to be, even without Clay, they got to be deeper rotational pieces, right?
I think Paschal's going to be huge.
You do?
I think Paschal, I think by the time Clay gets back, you're going to be seeing 20 minutes a game of Eric Paschal. And I think from the beginning, you're seeing 10. Because he's poor man's Draymond for them right now.
He serves a function that they cannot otherwise create.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Jordan Poole is probably to start his career like about 100 other guys.
And I think the growth potential for Jordan Poole is significantly bigger, but just the reliability factor on day one is significantly lower. I believe Steve Kerr feels like right now he could put Eric Paschal in an NBA game and he wouldn't screw everything up. And he'd probably get you a few rebounds, knock down an open jumper, do the things you want a undersized four basically to do. And I don't think he feels that way about Jordan Poole. I think he feels like if he puts Jordan Poole out there, there's a 15 or 20% chance he catches lightning in a bottle, and 80 or 85% he screws some stuff up.
Is this Jordan Bell becoming Jordan Poole?
No.
In a different position?
I think I want that guy in a shooting guard. I don't want that guy in a 4/5 who I just need to block shots and rebound the ball.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know, I'm okay with a guy who's goofy but has some upside, might shoot too much. Like, J.R. Smith, say what you want about him, has generally been a useful player. I see value in a J.R. Smith. I see less value in Jordan Bell.
Chilton Autobody text line 95795. If Clay comes back, we'll call it February 27th because that is what I have proclaimed here on August 12th, 2019. By the way, happy birthday, Dad. Is a realistic one-loss total for the Golden State Warriors if Clay comes back and this team stays relatively healthy? You think Willie Cauley-Stein could be one of those under-the-radar moves that you didn't end up paying this guy a lot? And think about it. I feel like Willie Cauley-Stein thought he was going to have much more interest on the open market based on the name, where he went to school, the physical attributes, and maybe it was a little bit humbling for him not to get the kind of money that he was hoping to receive out on the open market, and maybe he's got a little something to prove now.
You don't have to look any further than his comments to know he expected to get paid more. I mean, he basically said that. I don't know if this is humbling. Here's what I think.
Playing irritating.
But I think no matter who you are, for the most part, playing with Steph Curry and Draymond Green gives you an opportunity to be better. That's what I think. Now,
but
will Willie Cauley-Stein accept and capitalize on that opportunity? That remains to be seen. He certainly has the skill set to do so.
I think, though, that there is something to be said for the fact that the only guy who ever played on this team and went somewhere and cashed out was Harrison Barnes.
Yeah, it's relative. I mean, you know, someone like Ian Clark, cash out probably isn't the right word, but he made money based on what he did here, right?
Festus Ezeli got paid. He got hurt, but he got paid.
He never played for that.
Okay, in terms of dollars per minute played, yes, infinite is the best type of contract to have. But I think that some guys, and I think this is true throughout history, is fringe guys on great teams are always sort of inflated till you think about, yeah, but what is he worth? Because he played with all those great guys. How hard is it to not look good? And I think that works against you at contract time.
Yes.
So I don't know if Willie Cauley-Stein, because I know nothing of him other than as a player, I don't know how much of him looks at this as an opportunity and how much of him looks at this as this is a chance to get paid, which means I've got to put numbers up, which means I've got to do things that sometimes they're going to ask me not to do. So, I mean, it's I think there's a mindset issue that sort of has to get settled in his own brain before we decide how useful he will be for these guys. Because I think a lot of what they ask a big guy to do is not to worry about what's in the box score.
I think if he's smart, though, which I'd have no idea if he is, but if he's smart, he will realize that in actuality, when you're Willie Cauley-Stein in this situation, the way to get paid is to not go off script and, in fact, do the things you're supposed to do. Because if people have questions and concerns about Cauley-Stein in terms of signing him, I think a lot of them have to do with the perception that he's a little bit cocky, the perception that he may have been more about money and flashy plays than defense and team wins. Now, again, I don't know the guy. I don't know if that's true or not. But I do know he has a set of skills that should fit really well here. And whether he'll put up more numbers, I don't know. But if he is consistent and a good citizen with the Warriors, I think that's his best route to getting more money elsewhere.
What about him and D'Angelo working in concert, working that pick and roll? We know how much D'Angelo ran pick and roll with the Nets, and that could give this offense another element when Curry and Draymond are out of the game, when things get a little bogged down, give teams a different look and give them something, Cauley-Stein and D'Angelo, that could be dangerous for the opposition to deal with.
I'm fascinated by this, and I'm very interested in Ray's thoughts, because not a secret. People are talking about it constantly. D'Angelo Russell did most of his best work as a Brooklyn Net out of pick and roll.
Right.
Also, not a secret, talked about all the time, the Warriors have not used a lot of pick and roll. And in fact, a lot of people complain about how little they use pick and roll with Draymond, Steph, KD, all that stuff. We talked a ton. It's one of the only actual basketball things we've talked about in the last 3 years of Warriors is why aren't they running more pick and roll? First of all, I think we'll see more pick and roll, because a good coach uses his players' strengths, and not only is Russell good at that, but Cauley-Stein is great at that, and I don't think it's a coincidence that they added Cauley-Stein after adding D'Angelo Russell. On the other hand, I expect them to try to diversify D'Angelo Russell in what he's capable of doing and in ways he can be effective, because that's to the good for a player that maybe they see as part of the team, but maybe they see as an asset to move. And if they can show that he's adding skills at age 23 and still improving after his first All-Star appearance last year, that only increases his value. So I think we get both. I think we get more pick and roll from the Warriors and also more different looks from Russell.
I'm not sure about the second. I think they will try to do the first. And we'll see if Cauley-Stein is fully engaged on that, because it is in many ways on this team a relatively thankless job to be the guy who sets the pick, especially when you're talking about a guy in Russell who has, for the large part of his basketball playing career, and I include college, more of a shoot first guy than a let's see how we can make this work best. I mean, the thing about Russell is he's got to adapt to at least one other guy who's better than he is offensively.
Yep.
By a wide margin.
Yep.
And I'm not trying to diminish Russell at all. And then come the end of February, the 29th against Phoenix, a second guy like that. So he's going to have to make two different, fairly radical adjustments, it seems to me, in the space of a year at a time when I think he wants to establish, again, like Cauley-Stein, that he's worthy of a fat deal. And being the third guy is as hard a way to make big, big money as it is to be a center on a team that is pretty much played without a center most of its glory years.
You got to get really close to, if not win a title, for the third guy on your squad to make big-time money.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to be one of the top three or four teams in the league over a couple-year period for the third guy on your squad to justify
paying
a big contract.
Yeah.
And Harrison Barnes.
Yeah, exactly. And with Russell, I think Ray makes a great point about the multiple adjustments. And it's the second one that actually, I think, means more to me. When he's out there with Curry, first of all, nobody's going to argue about the players who should be on the floor, because they only have so many, right?
Yeah, Jordan Poole's not going to be pushing those guys for playing time.
Exactly. And there's going to be a little bit of your turn, my turn with Steph and D'Lo. There's just no avoiding that.
That's life in the NBA.
And look, D'Angelo Russell might be the most confident kid in the world. He has to, at some level, recognize who Steph Curry is. And I don't know that deferring is going to be much of an issue there. Plus, Steph will give him the ball plenty. Steph's not going to be shy about sharing the ball with D'Angelo Russell. I don't worry too much about them playing together, in part because there's no other options. Obviously, there's a pretty big question as to whether you can play all three dudes, Curry, Russell, and Klay together. And more to the point, the adjustment for Russell there is going to involve not just occasionally deferring like he does with Steph, but actually making some decisions over the course of a game where last year in college, he might have gone and got his own shot. Now he's got to give it up to Klay because Klay, that's what Klay does. He catches the ball and shoots the ball. And you're going to have to, D'Angelo Russell, participate in that. And it's not as obvious an adjustment to me as I'm playing next to Steph now. He's going to need to have the ball sometimes. It's this pretty decent shot that I took 9 times out of 10 last year. I can only take 1 or 2 times out of 10 this year because Klay's going to be open the other 8.
All right, should be fascinating stuff, and of course we'll be following along. Warriors' regular season schedule is out, so definitely take a look at that. Some dates that you're not going to want to miss as they open up the doors on the Chase Center. All right, fellas, Battle of the Bay begins tomorrow. We'll talk about the matchup, plus hard to believe it's been 30 years since the Loma Prieta earthquake. I know, obviously it won't be till October 17th, but with the A's and the Giants getting together and the 1989 Giants squad having a little reunion, it'd be a good time to reflect on what was a crazy time in the Bay Area. So we'll talk about all that and more coming up. It's Ryan Covey, Ray Ratto, Matt Kolsky. This is the Damon Bruce Show, sponsored by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome on back. This is the Damon Bruce Show. I am
Kolsky,
not
you know nothing.
Damon Bruce.
Well, that's from an off-air conversation.
That's
I just
not
wanted
new.
To finish it off.
You guys just want to keep going?
No, he's
no,
right.
No, we
okay. settled.
Oh,
we settled.
That's it?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, everything's handled.
He made a bunch of salient points, and then I insulted him at the end. It worked out perfectly.
I want to read a text because we were talking Willie Cauley-Stein. I'm not running you off the road here, am I?
Nah, go ahead, Kolsky. I'm here for you, brother.
Willie Cauley-Stein is not Clint Capella, says an 805 texter. Who was he running this amazing pick and roll with in Sacramento? He set picks because he can't rebound or shoot. I just want to be clear. I don't think anyone's saying he's Clint Capella. I think we're just pointing out that he ran a lot of pick and roll, factually speaking. There are statistics for this. He ran it a lot, and he was better at scoring in the pick and roll than any other way he might score. That's all we're saying, and he is generally a pick and roll player. That's where his skills can thrive. He's going to have to be better at it if he wants to earn money next year or help the Warriors out, but that's what he does.
Yeah, if he was better at it, he'd still be in Sacramento.
Right.
And he'd be making a lot more money.
Well, and I think also, maybe I would put it slightly differently. If he was as good as he has been at times on a consistent basis, he'd still be in Sacramento and he'd be making a lot more money. So his inconsistency is what allowed you to have him at this price. So thank you for that, is what you should be saying. Thanks for being inconsistent.
Hopefully that's some foul money for the Golden State Warriors.
Exactly.
And that's how we got to be looking at it. It's not like they gave this dude a bunch of money.
Yeah, and compared to other big men who ran the pick and roll, he's about an average pick and roll finisher. He's not a spectacular pick and roll finisher. I'm just saying he did it a lot.
Speaking of pick and rolls, which
can't do it.
Sorry.
Yes, right.
Wanted to weigh in on his pick and
roll. I just
wanted
to see if you were going to just keep using pick and roll in the same sentence 6 or 7 times.
I'll try.
On a roll.
Oh.
Not to, of a pick variety.
Thank you.
How about that Bay Bridge series coming up, guys, huh?
The awkward transition.
Little Giants A's tomorrow. You got Brett Anderson, Madison Bumgarner. Brett Anderson's been pretty solid this year for the A's, and really in a year where they've had some inconsistency in the starting rotation, but overall they've been a pretty damn good baseball team. Then you look at the San Francisco Giants. I would argue coming into the weekend, because I'm not a huge believer in Jeff Samardzija, although he looked incredible in his start over the weekend, and he's looked a lot better the last couple of, really this season, than we've seen in the Samardzija of yesteryear. What did he sign? 5 for 90, I think, is what the Giants gave him.
If I asked you how old is Brett Anderson, what would you say? Are you looking at his stats? Don't look.
I'm not. No, I didn't look. I did not look.
Okay.
I'm going to guess 31.
You're right on it, but okay. I would have guessed like 37. It feels like he's been in my life for my whole life.
Now, in fairness, I may just be remembering that I just saw that he was 31 when I did look at it a couple of minutes ago.
Because I was shocked by that.
But I think I knew that.
I was shocked by that. He's still only 31 years old. He's been through so much. I'm happy for the guy. He's having a nice little year.
And usually a baseball guy, when they start to hit their stride, is like when they're 35, you know, when they've been up in the bigs for like 3 years because nobody wants to start their clock.
I mean, the story with Anderson, too, has always been if he can just stay healthy, he's pretty tough.
We talk about Jimmy Garoppolo?
Time.
Oh, sorry.
This is an exciting matchup of lefties for me. Maybe I'm the only one.
No, absolutely. And look, I feel like, you know, for the Giants, taking 3 or 4 from the Phillies, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. Yeah. And let me ask you this. Now, we know two things, right? We know that the National League isn't great, and we know that the Giants aren't very good. And those two things combined have kept them in the race. Which is more for you? That the Giants are kind of stubborn and there might be a little something here? Is it more that, or is it more, look, man, they're a horrible baseball team. It's just the National League is just really that god-awful this year. Which one is it more of?
Ray?
Oh, it's the National League.
National League is just terrible.
I mean, well, that grouping is pretty poor. I mean, they had a week in which they went 3-4 and lost zero games to the second wild card team.
They didn't lose any ground.
I mean, there were only two teams I think that had winning records in the last week, and they were the Mets, who never lose, and Milwaukee, who is suddenly hot again after being dreadfully cold. The A's, on the other hand, lost a game in the wild card standings to Tampa, because in the last 15 games, Tampa's gone 12-3.
Yeah,
I mean, the A's are chasing a... I'm not sure I want to use the word excellence, but I will say this. Tampa and Cleveland are playing ungodly baseball, and the fact that the A's are still capable of touching both those teams for a playoff spot is more of a statement to me than the fact that the Giants, you know, as a mediocre team, can't be shed yet. I mean, Cincinnati's in the race now.
I mean, literally, the Giants are under 500. They're an under 500 team. The Oakland A's are 16 games over, and they're basically in the same spot in the playoff race.
Yeah, that's
so. So what is it? It's clearly the National League stinks. That being said, the feistiness in these guys is kind of fun, isn't it? I mean, I've crushed the Giants as much as anybody this year. I still think they are a fundamentally bad baseball team. I don't believe they can make the playoffs. It strains disbelief too far for me. And yet they clobbered the ball all weekend long. They got young players that are exciting. Well, slightly younger than their other players who are exciting to watch. And I don't know. If this team had not won 3 World Series titles, at least one of which they barely seem to have a better team than they have now, then it'd be easy to write them off. But when they have like a gritty weekend like that, because of what we know about this franchise, right, you have to keep the door open slightly.
Well, and I'll say this too. Okay, clearly the stretch where they went 19-4, not sustainable, right?
No,
we all understand that.
We
but
knew that.
The putrid nature of the National League has allowed them to survive this period that we all knew was coming, where they were going to level off and ultimately play bad baseball again. I think they're 4-7 in their last 11 games. What this has allowed is for them to cool off a bit, regroup, and maybe get hot again.
Yeah, when is Dickerson coming back? Where is Cueto at in his rehab is what we need to know. Because they are just going to need some more at some point.
You mean you need more than more than 1.7 starting pitchers, Kolsky? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Something's got to give here, and it's going to be their ability to win if they don't get some more players available.
I guess it matters, but not much, because you're talking about 8 teams separated by five games.
Yeah.
I don't think you can make any assumptions about anything at all, because 10 games ago, everybody who watches baseball at all was convinced that the Milwaukee Brewers were dead. Well, they're not dead. Now they're a wild card team again. Or no, they're a half game out. But they won, like, you know, they went 5-1 over the week. When you look at every team in this blood clot of mediocrity, they all have stretches where either the schedule's kind of them or they just figure it out, and then they have a week where you go, wow, they're not bad. A week ago it was Cincinnati. I mean, Cincinnati's in the race, and they're god-awful, except for one thing. Their Pythagorean number says they should have about 9 more wins than their record shows. And if they figure out any level of pitching, they could be in. They could actually be the second wild card team.
Yeah.
And a week ago, they were 13th out of 15 teams.
It's ridiculous.
So I think at this point, it's not so much focusing on the Giants that helps you. It's embracing a level of chaos that baseball rarely provides.
Embrace the suck.
Yeah, well, it's not even suck. It's just meh. I mean, it's just they're all, you know, they're 3-4 for a week. Or
it's very NFL-esque, frankly.
By the way, you asked about Johnny Cueto.
Yeah.
So he's targeting a September return. So
yep.
He's thrown several bullpens.
So I have some updated details. He apparently hit 92 miles per hour on the gun in a 2-inning rehab start on Friday.
Yeah, I was getting that, but it's cool.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's no problem.
Why you stepped on his deal?
Literally just starting to read some of that information. But go ahead, Matt. You're doing a great job. You're rolling
if
now.
If it helps
so you
at all, I didn't pay attention to any of it.
Thanks, Ray. I'm just messing with you.
Expected to make another rehab assignment Wednesday or Thursday. He'll actually be at single A, which is real games at least to a certain degree. And he's expected to get up to about 40 pitches. Following that through, back to your original thing, September return is looking likely.
So there we go.
I have a further update.
Is it on Cueto?
Yeah.
All right.
On the 23rd. Tendonitis will flare up again, and he will have a setback.
See,
he'll have to.
That's just.
I don't. That's just me being hateful.
There's
but
no need for that.
I want an update on Cueto, the dude from Total Recall. I don't want an update on Cueto. I want to.
Could I
open
give you
your mind?
Could I give you a Dickerson instead?
Yeah, I'm not going to say it, but yes, give me some Dickerson.
It looks like he's turned the corner, quoth the Bochy. After the win on Saturday, he told the Mercury News, "Dickerson has turned the corner." They're hopeful he can start his rehab assignment tomorrow, possibly with AAA. So could be seeing the Dick at the park back at the end of the week.
That's uncalled for.
That is his nickname, say it as many times as I please.
Then you
at least until I'm asked not to by somebody in a position of authority.
Then you are a 9-year-old boy until further notice.
That was the last time. I've just been told that was the last time.
That's it? It's run its
course? Fine.
Oh, no, never mind. Elena
it's
is the
name.
Ultimate authority.
You can't call somebody that, but
yeah.
It's his name.
They tried to put it on his players only or whatever that's called.
And they
jersey.
Were told they couldn't because...
Because MLB is not as fun as 95.7 The Game. You
although
heard
in other
first.
Cases, MLB was exactly that much fun. So... If you say it too many times, people will only think of it as the member, and it loses its
not
fun
the team
quality.
The
yeah,
team.
Correct.
Okay, sorry, Ray.
I'm just saying that if you keep saying that over and over again, that's all people will think of, and it ruins the fun.
You're right. You got to use it sparingly.
Yeah, we don't want to ruin the fun around here. All right, should we bring in the 5 o'clock hour?
Let's do it for
I don't see any reason why. Let's not.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.